Have you ever watched the news and wished that you could see something more positive, or looked online and saw all the aggravation and anger and hatred out there and thought to yourself, why can't I just see more positive things in my life? Hi, I'm Mike Rathbun, and I'm the host of the Kindness Matters podcast. Every week, we promise to bring you stories that will uplift you and motivate you and inspire you to see the kindness and be the kindness that this world needs more of. Tune in, the Kindness Matters podcast with me, your host, Mike Rathbun.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Deluxe Edition. I am your host, Casey Shearer. Joining me, as always, L. Ray Sexton.
What's going on, Casey?
Hey, not too much, buddy. Before we get started here, I just want to give a big shout out to Agnesa Spitfire Kirikosian. She is the new super flyweight BYB champion. She beat Shelby Cannon last week in Tampa. I was ringside for the fight. It was fucking awesome.
Get any blood on you? You get any blood on you?
No, we weren't that close. But it was still pretty cool. Yeah, the ringside seats are actually maybe like 6 feet back from the ring, but still cool. So yeah. Awesome. Awesome time. Check out BYB if you can. The next show is in Denver. So yeah, another great interview here tonight too, Ray, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, Lou was amazing.
Yeah, what do people know Lou from? Some of the more popular stuff that Lou's in.
The Walking Dead, you know, because of the mustache. They're going to definitely know him from that. And 31, the Rob Zombie movie, he plays Psycho Head, one of the clowns with chainsaws and, you know. Okay. But he's been in a bunch of stuff. So
yeah. Yeah, he was in the Halloween, right? He was the one that wasn't the Rob Zombie Halloween though, was it?
Yeah, that's the Rob.
Oh, it was?
He's been in a bunch of Rob Zombie stuff.
Yeah, Lou's great. But I mean, we barely even talked about the stuff that Lou's in. We just talked about other stuff. So this was a fun conversation with Lou. But yeah, I guess let's just get into it, right, Ray?
Let's do it.
After this quick house cleaning, we are a part of the Deluxe Edition Network. You can find all of the other great shows over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com. And the podcasts of the month this month are the Drink a Clot podcast with our buddy Rob Valencias. He was on with us. He did a takeover episode a few months ago, I guess, at this point, probably. Mm-hmm. And we have Quad Pro Quo. They're a couple of neighbors, two couples who are neighbors who talk about movies. And then we got the Steve and Crypto Show, who are they talk about mainly horror stuff and do interviews with horror guests. And vote for them on the Rondo Awards. You got to go to rondoawards.com. And it's an email gimmick. I'll put the link in the show notes. So go vote for Steven Crypto Show over on the Rondo Awards and check out all the other great shows at deluxeeditionnetwork.com. Let's see. If you would like to support our show, you can go over to patreon.com. patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod. And right now we're running a deal over there, right, Ray?
Hell yeah, we're running a deal. You can get our $5 tier for $1.
Yeah, what do you get for that?
You get behind the scenes stuff. That's what you get.
Ray doesn't know what you get.
I have no idea what you get, but it's only $1.
He just knows it's a discount. You get a lot of cool stuff. Go check it out.
It's a dollar. I mean, it's only $1, and that's for the whole month.
Yeah.
I think. Could it be is. For the week, but even if it was for the week, it's only $1.
No, we're running this deal for a month.
Yeah.
So yeah, go sign up. And let's see, if you'd like to buy a t-shirt, you go over to whatamaneuver.net/collection/deluxe-edition, or we also now have a regular T Public store with merch on it, as well as the 10 Cent Beer Night podcast merch. But what kind of stuff are they doing over on T Public, Ray?
Well, we have our regular store where you can get actual official deluxe edition with Casey and Ray merchandise. Or you can go over to my store and get the bootleg stuff. Now, I'm not going to tell you which one I want you to go to, because that would be wrong. But just go buy some merch.
Go buy merch. And let's see, one more thing. Go over and check us out on Instagram. We've been making a lot of shorts and reels, whatever they call them, on Instagram. Putting them over there. And Ray does a lot of the memes and such. And then we also have our Facebook page. Come check us out, facebook.com/deluxe-edition-pod. And let's see. Oh, today's show is brought to you by Copper John's Beard Products. Go over to Copper John's Beard. Let's see, copperjohnsbeard.com, and use code DELUXE10 for 10% off of your order. Did I miss anything, Ray?
I would like to say, remember to rate, review, like, subscribe on all the different platforms we're on, because it does help us out. A simple comment of good stuff or I hate you guys. Either way, it helps us. Just leave a comment.
Yeah, just say something. And, oh, yeah, I'll also put all the links and everything. They're always in the show notes, but I made a link tree for us finally, and there's like 20 or 30 different affiliates that we work with. So there's like tons of codes and all kinds of stuff on our link tree. Go check it out. We have a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. Go save yourself some money. You're going to buy stuff anyways.
Right. All right, man. So let's get into it with Lou.
Let's go talk to Lou Temple.
All right. Lou, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Nice to say hello. How's everybody today? This 7th of April.
Doing good.
Nice to see you. This was easy, relatively easy. Thanks for pushing it back an hour. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem. We're not doing anything. I'm unemployed. Ray has off tomorrow because of the eclipse. So.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
is that a national holiday?
Well, in Cleveland, everybody's freaking out about it because that's where I'm at. And
yeah, that's this. Isn't that the epicenter?
Apparently, it is. And for 4 minutes and whatever, 50 seconds tomorrow, I'm planning on just staring at it and hoping that I can get some disability checks out of it.
Nice. Hey, Cleveland will be typically the party capital of the United States of America tomorrow.
Well, I'm staying at my place and I ain't going nowhere tomorrow because they talk about closing highways and everything else. So I'm like, nope, I'm staying home.
That is a big deal. That's a total eclipse of the sun. And is Stevie Nicks singing the national anthem for the eclipse?
She should be.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. Our hotels went from like $100 a night to like $800 a night for the
eclipse. Oh, yeah. Exploitative opportunist. That's the old carpetbagger. The old carpetbagger mentality. That is the good USA. Yeah. Capitalism. Yep. That's great, because they don't get to make that unless, I'm sure in the rock and roll inductions or maybe the Browns do a playoff game or, you know, every now and again. But
The Browns do a playoff game. It's like $1,500 a night for a hotel room. It's, you know, because it only happens. Well, actually, the eclipse happens more often than that. So.
I just worked with someone from Cleveland, and I referenced that because I every time I've been to Cleveland a few times, and I always marvel at, I don't think I pronounce it correctly. We've probably talked about this because I always do it when Cleveland comes up. Is it Cayuga Avenue? Cayuga?
Cuyahoga.
Thank you.
Yes.
Cuyahoga Avenue. I'm always marveled at how lengthy it is. It's like the thoroughfare through Cleveland.
Yeah. Cleveland's a fun place when you got time to kill, you know.
No, I've never had a complaint with Cleveland. But anyway, Yvette Nicole Brown from the show Community. Yes.
Community, yeah.
Yeah. And so she's from Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
and has nothing but fond things to say about Cleveland.
Nice. What did you do with her?
I did a television show. It's called The Family Business, and it's on BET, maybe on their streamer. I'm not sure. It might be BET Plus. It's kind of the Black Sopranos. Its matriarch is headed up by Ernie Hudson, and he kind of is a wealthy high-end car dealership who runs drug trade in between. And then his family, interestingly, has really kind of, over the last 5 years, really spread, as they do. So it's morphed into, you know, Family Business Texas, and now we're Family Business New Orleans. So all manner of family business takes us many, many places. So I kind of show up as nefarious middleman for, you know, designer drugs, and then you get into trouble just enough and out of trouble, and they move me around. I actually never really know what I'm doing one episode from the next, and so I just go with it. It's pretty fun. But she was she ran a high-end Texas Hold'em game in New Orleans that I won a bunch of cash, and then had a little bit of a rift against pocket eights or pocket aces, and that dude ended up dying. And of course, it looks like I did it, but I did not. I swear to you, I did not shoot the deputy or the sheriff.
And that's on BET, you said?
BET, yeah. I like it because everyone is entirely nice. It's really enthusiastic, but also ambitious, and they do a lot, and it's novella, no doubt, but in an urban sort of way. So they might get a lot away with a lot that we would go, what, you can do that on television? What? I do that pretty much always, and so I'm like, wow, this is fun. I got to do, I had a couple times, a couple scenes with Sheila E. Remember Prince's drummer? Remember, like, she went out on her own solo, the glamorous life, you know, she was, you know, sexy and a musician and really cool. And, so I did a few scenes with her, and that was always fun. And there's another guy I work with on that show called Michael Jai White, who's kind of, he is Michael B. Jordan before Michael B. Jordan, kind of an action hero. He's very cool. And so, yeah, you get to, and Ernie Hudson's great, obviously. He's got a Ghostbusters coming out, or it's out, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just came out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude's like 70 something years old. Looks like he's like 40 still. Incredible.
You would not believe it. In person, it's even better. You know, in person, I'm like, no way, you're doing great. And he's like, what do you expect? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess great, but you know, I look in the mirror every day, and so I set the bar low. That was fun.
I didn't look for it yet, but I want to get BET, the streaming thing, because there's a show on there I want to watch, the Miss Pat show. They were talking about it.
She's a comedian.
They were talking about it on Rogan the other day. She's a really funny comedian. I read her book a couple years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool. Speaking of comedians, I did a show in Houston last month called Mo. And this guy, Mo, is a comedian who's he's a Persian gentleman that is raised in Houston, Texas. And because of his shtick is that he was always thrown in with the Latin clan, the Mexican clan, because everyone thought he was Mexican. So he learned to speak English via the Vatos, you know, the Mexicans, which is kind of funny. And so that's his deal. He's a fugitive refugee trying to get asylum in the United States in Houston, and somehow crosses the border in Mexico, gets in trouble. You're not allowed to do that. And so I was a judge that was just trying to figure it out. And it was pretty fun. And he's very funny. And that show called Mo, it's done well. These comedians do well with their shows typically.
And what's that on? Where can you find that at?
Netflix. It's nice. It's Netflix, and it was nominated for a Grammy last year.
Nice.
I'm trying to think. It's got a good executive producer, and it might be Ravi Kapoor. No, Riz. Who's Riz? I'm thinking of the ball player, Riz Ahmed. Who's Riz? Riz, super cool guy. But anyway, he's got some backing, and the show has legs. But I'm not sure how many. They told me this might be the last season. I don't know. So I was hoping to hear come the judge. You know, you're just the straight man when you're the judge, unless you're Fred. Who was Herman Munster? Fred.
Fred. Yeah, I know you mean from the two Utes.
Two what? The two what, sir?
Or Harry? Or Harry from Night Court? Yeah.
Harry from Night Court was fun. That was fun, and I guess they've rebooted Night Court with John Larroquette returning, but with a new judge, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't have the same flavor. It was all right, but it just not, you know, some things are just lightning in a bottle.
I think so. I felt the exact same thing, and I admittedly only watched one episode, but it couldn't invite me back, was Frasier. I watched that, and it didn't land. It didn't have the same sparkle, like you say. Yeah,
that's tough.
I'm curious about the new Terrifier 3. Is he on 3?
Yeah.
They're okay. And it feels like he's do you all know the franchise? Do you know the work?
Oh yeah.
I got the poster that Casey got me for Christmas for Terrifier 3 already. I haven't even seen it.
Casey, you know the gifts. So someone mentioned, so I think, and I've been out on the road with Damien and Michael, who plays Art the Clown, and so they're really sweethearts. I mean, they're really sweet dudes. And so I heard that their first pass, or maybe it was a script, the studio was like, oh no, we can't do that. And knowing Damien, and he's an easy guy, don't get me wrong, he's an easy guy, but he also is a little like Rob Zombie, that like he kind of wants what he knows what he wants, you know. And so I'm curious if that's still being backed by whatever studio it was that was running it out there.
Whatever the studio is, from what I've heard, he's going to try and one up the salt scene from part 2.
Mm.
And he's got it figured out, and he says it even makes him queasy. So,
well, you know, maybe it's all foreplay in getting us all titillated that, oh man, this guy's even overtaking the studio. And then also I heard that he's got some really cool, well, they're all cool. Don't get me wrong. Everyone's cool, but his cast is really cool. In the Name of Dan Roebuck, is that true?
Oh, I'm a huge Daniel Roebuck fan. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think
that is. Yeah, we have him. We have him scheduled on the podcast in a couple of weeks.
I don't know if he can talk about that. I'm not sure that I was supposed to talk about that, but either way, you got to ask him. Are you doing Terrifier 3?
Absolutely.
And there's another cool dude that might be working with him. Oh, whoa. It might be. And that reminds me, because I got invited to a birthday party. It might be Clint Howard.
Oh shit.
That's a good get too.
Right?
Yeah. So the ice cream man himself. Yeah.
I say Damien is Damien Leone in Terrifier 3 has Art the Clown right where we all want him with, ice cream man and the priestly Daniel Roebuck.
Yeah.
I love Dan. I just think he was an absolute delight in Munsters as grandpa for me. I loved it. Loved him in it.
Yeah. He was really good in that.
Yeah.
You seem to have an inside track on this Terrifier 3. Could we expect
only because I've been out with some adult beverages with the guys. and they're fun. I got to say, are they difficult guests? Have you guys reached out?
We would love to have him, but
next time I talk to him, I'll throw you guys.
We'd super appreciate
it. Yeah, that's a good interview. All right. So moving on, interestingly, he's one guy and I don't know, like, I don't know that he'd use me. I don't know if I fit in his world, but you know, it'd be nice to experience it. Another guy, interestingly.
You're in a ton of horror movies, though, man. Why? How would you not fit in the?
I don't know. I love David Gordon Green, and I just like his work, and I like his Halloweens as well. David Gordon Green had reached out to see if that. If there's any chance I could reprise like my Noel Klug's Halloween guy over across the line in his boundaries. Turns out he does not, those characters are not owned by the franchise, so to speak. Well, maybe they are, but it would, those are Rob Zombies. He'd have to get it from Rob. It's like a weird trade, a box of bats and a bucket of balls and take it for Temple. Yeah. So I did this short years ago, not that long, but three or four years ago, probably. And with a young lady named Caitlin Stacy, she was great. It was called Laura Hasn't Slept. And it was the precursor or the foundation for the movie Smile.
Oh, okay.
And that director is Parker Finn. And because Smile did pretty well.
Yeah, it did.
and it has its moments. It's got, its sort of theme, its jump scare element to it. I think they marketed that movie quite well, right?
Oh, yeah. With the ballpark stuff and the people in the stands. Yeah, they did great promotion for that movie.
And so I assume that when you do something like that, your movie is automatically going to be okay because we're all excited to see it. I think marketing should be focused on as opposed to just throwing it out there,
Mm-hmm.
Five Nights at Freddy's has a real audience based on the video game. And so they were going to get their audience, their attendance regardless.
Yeah.
But we all might be mediocre with that movie, probably.
Yeah, my kid dragged me to the theater to see that one, and I was pretty disappointed considering I love Josh. Future Man's one of my all-time favorite shows. He's amazing on that. But I'm sitting in the theater going, God, when is this going to end? Holy shit.
I didn't see it. So
you don't have a kid, so I had no choice but to go.
I'm the same way. I just was, hopeful. I was like, oh, this could be really,
Yeah, but, I mean... It looked like it had hope, and then you sit down and you're just like, ugh.
Remember the other one, Willie's.
With Nick Cage, yeah. Willie's Wonderland. I love that movie. That's a great movie.
Yeah, and how that's always the expectation, right? You want to be at least there. And did that guy, I'm trying to think of that director, did he ever get to go do a lot of anything else?
I don't know what he's done other than that. Maybe he's got something coming up.
Let's see. Kevin Lewis, he did The Accursed, Misdirection, The Third Nail, The Drop. Nothing I ever heard of.
Yeah, so Willy's Wonderland is his Citizen Kane, so to speak, at this point.
Yeah. It's pretty great. And Mr. Cage doesn't have a lot of dialogue in that movie.
Yeah, he has zero dialogue in that movie. But that's what makes it so fun is, that's why I love Nick Cage. And I get a lot of shit for my love of Mr. Cage, but...
I don't know why. And he's had this resurrection, so to speak, But... Like Renfield was, I enjoyed Renfield, and I thought he was campy as hell, but I thought the other guy gave it the foundation, that British guy who was great. I thought that kid was great.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And so I think that Cage keeps kind of a balance, you know, and everybody else does that, you know. De Niro can go out and do Meet the Fockers and nobody says anything, so, you know. And then do Lilies of the Flower Moon and almost kind of be embarrassed about that, like, yeah, I did do, you know, kind of a serious role, I know. And yeah, so I think Cage is fun. Yeah.
So you know, I'm sitting here talking to you and you're pretty calm. And yep. You've seen some Rob Zombie movies. Like, you played, what's the character's name? Psycho Head in 31.
Yeah. So,
and you're just sitting here as calm as day.
Worst character, it just immorally that I've ever done. And in that realm, also the most difficult because, you know, and Rob's great because he's very well thought. And like I said, he knows, you know, what he's looking for, and he doesn't goof off too much or try, you know, to spend a lot of time trying to find something. If something's working, let's run with it and go. If it's not, let's just scrap it and redirect. Even if a take is broke, it's very interesting. He'll change lenses and position of the camera. He's like, well, clearly that, you know, karmatically that wasn't supposed to be the shot. So let's just rearrange it and do it again. And I'm like, Rob, I just got something caught in my throat. Let's just do it again. No, let's reset. And I'm like, oh. So, but that particular role was difficult because there wasn't a lot of reason for these guys. I just kept asking, why are they so mad? Why are these guys so pissed off? And hey, that's up to you. You're the actor. You know, I just wrote it and I go, I get that. Help me out. You ever hear Black Betty by Ram Jam Band? I'm like, yeah, I love that song. He goes, yeah, spend some time with that. And I'm like, okay. And so that's sort of Rob, our shorthand. He'll always drop a song on me and I'll know exactly where he's going for that. And that was perfect. And so I made that choice to be very, everybody at the end, or it felt like people were sort of, you know, begging for their lives and sort of in admission to, you know, we didn't mean to be bad. And I just decided, fuck that. I'm going to be, and stole a line from him from Dragula. I will never die as I'm getting cut in half by the chainsaw. So that was just sort of, it's one of the roles that I really went for broke and pushed the envelope, maybe almost too far. And even for Rob, I think it felt a little unsafe. And I remember coming home every night just like, this is not good. I do not like this person or this guy. And, you know, it started... I don't know about y'all, but
did you watch the final product then when it was done?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I saw it. I was like, oh, and there were so many, you know, it just starts with Richard and Daniel, which is just, he could have started and ended that movie right there actually. And it had been perfect. But I realized there was, nobody was likable in that. Even Sherry, who's delightful, isn't a very likable character, you know? And so I just decided, you're going to be a scorpion, a tarantula, a viper, a rat. What type of predator rodent are you going to choose to be in this terrarium of assholes? Because that's the only way you're going to survive. And so I pushed it pretty hard. It started in wardrobe. I remember he had originally had coveralls set up for us, kind of hillbilly lumberjack guys. And I made the mistake of saying, you know, what's really disarming to me, Rob, is when I see a dude like walking in the neighborhood without a shirt. Now in the 70s, maybe that's cool. You know, no shirt, cut off, carrying a, you know, a six or a Coors or something. But this day and age, when you see a dude not wearing a shirt, even if he's out jogging, it's bizarre to me. It's problematic. And so he's like, yeah, no problem. Get rid of the shirt. And you want to just, you know what? How about let's go with cutoffs in fact, let's make those Daisy Dukes and we'll have some women's underwear underneath. And I'm like, oh, whoa, hey, you know. And so then it just went for broke. And with all the paint and, you know, the words 100% motherfucker on the back. And it just, it went from one to the point when I showed up, I was an absolute menace to where I was unappealing and not someone even on set all of a sudden. And I was wearing that mask and he had told me about that. Cause you know, Rob does that on stage. He said, when you wear this, you're going to feel like you can get away with some shit you don't do as Lou. And that's exactly what I did. And so, I probably did make a lot of friends on that set. but I think he got what he had wanted. But everybody was just kind of a menace, you know, Poncho. Oh my God. You know, it was,
that's a messed up movie. That really,
yeah.
Is.
And there were some, like, you know, there's some really cool people in the movie too. And it was just like, everybody's just angry. Ugh. Traffic jam angry, you know? So, I think that's exactly where he was wanting that to be. And yeah. So we did. And so I think my Black Betty version was from a band called, I think it's Spiderbait.
Spiderbait. Their version's amazing of that song.
Yeah. It was kind of the amperage. And you talk about calm. And yes, I'm years from Psychohead. But at that point when I'm doing it, that was the movement, you know, and that was the anger and the desperation. And all of a sudden, you know, it was on. It was physical. So
it's amazing. Do you have to avoid Black Betty now just so you don't get all jacked up?
Wound up. I do. I look for definitely a tamer version of it. You know, Ministry's got a version too that's pretty heavy metal. But yeah, I have not seen Twisted Metal. But I want to see that because I think there's some of that sensibility in that movie.
Yeah, that's a good show. It's got a lot of stuff going on. I'm looking forward to season two of that because
and it's really physical, isn't it? Don't there's a lot of physical violence?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of violence, but it's also got a lot of it's almost like a horror comedy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of funny things about, you know, the guy collects CDs because there's, you know, the world's ended, but he's got a bunch of CDs in his car and stuff. And he's always excited when he can find CDs to listen to. So
his car, that he drives a car that actually can play them because, you know, we've all got CDs and they're just coasters now. even our laptops don't play them anymore.
My car, I got me a nice old 2013, baby. That thing will play some CDs.
I do too. I've got that exactly that 13 inch MacBook Pro, but guess what? That drive is broke. So it just goes in and then comes out. It doesn't pop. And I've got a lot of like cool DVDs. We're, you know, I'm sure we all have cassettes, mixtape that we made and wanted to, and somewhere there'll, you know, there's always the idea, I'm going to get these pictures in an album. I'm going to digitize all of this data and have it so I can play it. And it's all going to, the reality is it's all on Spotify. You don't need any of that crap.
No, I'll tell you right now, I'm one of those guys. I got like 900 DVDs laying on the floor behind me. And I'm like, when that streaming shit goes down, buddy, I'm the one you're going to call and say, hey, I need a movie. What do you got for me?
You're going to open up. You're going to open up shop.
That's right. Hollywood Video. Going to be in my apartment. That's right.
And speaking of horror comedies, I have one that is forever waiting to come out. And I'm kind of excited about it. It's called Seven Cemeteries with Danny Trejo. Nice. And did we talk about it last time? Because it's probably been that long. And that's
really? You were on 3 years. 3 years ago was the last time you were on.
Oh, so this is a movie where Danny is, you know, he's He's released from prison. He's been a, you know, lifetime criminal. His gang has all been shot up and killed, and he's left for dead on a bad debt out in the desert. And a bruja, a Mexican witch, revives him and gives him the power to revive his dead posse. And there's seven of us in seven different cemeteries. And we come back as the undead. You know, we're kind of, we're not daft. We're not, you know, mummified, but we're definitely undead and can't be killed. So it's kind of fun and funny. And we're basically the same idiots. We just can't be killed. And so we have to go take on a drug cartel on the border of Mexico to save this girl's ranch in order for us to, the bruja, this witch, for us to get, grant us our lives back. And hijinks ensue. And it's really fun. And I want to see it, actually, or it was fun to make. So we'll see how it goes. Lots of prosthetics. You know, Danny's great. And vote for Pedro, Efron Ramirez is in it from Napoleon Dynamite. He's really fun too. And Vincent Ward, my old buddy, is in it. And so I want to see that. I think that's going to be just a lot of fun. Not enough horror comedies for my taste.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best genre of all the genres. Like people always say, how do you get somebody into horror? I go, you start with horror comedy. That's where you start. Like I like right now I've been showing people Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah. Those guys are great. Those guys are great. I always felt like Shaun of the Dead was a lot of fun.
That's good
too. Like one of the perfect movies. I don't know why we don't keep doing that. You go to the well one too many times though, and it doesn't
you know what it is? People either write comedy or they write horror. You got to have that special mentality. Like Mr. Zombie is really good at writing horror. I would love to see him take a stab at a horror comedy.
Wanting that a little bit with the Munsters, but I felt like that was a little bit too juvenile. Like even for 6-year-olds, that was too juvenile. I mean, it's kind of, you know, just bad jokes, like dad jokes, not bad jokes, dad jokes. And they were not good ones either. He does have a great sense of humor. And I think he should at this point be able to have the confidence that it would serve him, and he should just let it rip and go for it. I think he was trying as Super Albisto was a little bit also, juvenile humor in the fraternity row, you know, fart jokes and dick jokes, you know, a little too much there. So there's a fine balance.
Yeah.
Going back to 31. So for that role, how do you like, cause we talked to your buddy, Jake Busey, and you guys have been in a ton of movies together. Pig Killer in particular he told us about that. Like he didn't look into anything. Like he just went in and read it that day and was like, all right, this is what we're doing. Like he didn't want to get too into that just because of how brutal the shit was.
Yeah. I think he probably was wanting to be surprised, you know, and like, oh shit, she broke. Oh damn it. You know, just kind of be in the moment and not, you know, calculated. For 31, I knew that I was wanting to be a big problem, not just a problem, but like a big problem, and also be really scary in the form of where is he? And so when we were trying to set up, when they go into that cage, and I was thinking coming out of from the top, and then Rob was like, then we got an aerial thing. We've got to do a stunt. And I'm like, okay. And then I just saw this big hay pile and I had just seen the, what's the documentary on Apocalypse Now and with Martin Sheen, you know, and coming up out of the mud and I'm like, oh, we could come out of this haystack. And he goes, that's genius. So, you know, Rob's like in really great shape and a yoga guy and could like lay down flat and then pop up. And I'm like, we're going to have to adjust. The hay pile might need to be a little bigger. And so I knew coming out of that hay pile where the problem was amongst them, I knew that was going to be it. And then just picking on Jeff, you know, as the male in there and wanting to, you know, get just so ugly with the blow up doll, which was actually a hostage, and make that a real scene and no problem or remorse, you know, cutting a human in half and then going after Meg, you know, and like, you know, Jeff and I had rehearsed and with a lot of stunts and then Meg just went nuts. She was just like wild. It was like, holy shit, she's on my back. And I don't want to hurt her, but my God, she's got her finger in my mouth. I mean, what the fuck, you know? And she was great. Meg Foster's amazing. And so I just knew that it was going to be really physical, really ugly. And there was no way to half step it. And I unfortunately, it was just going to be ugly, you know? So I was pushing probably harder than what Jake was probably doing in Pig Killer.
Do you think too, maybe because of like the production vet, like, do you think you got on 31, you had more time or like the production?
I think we had more time, but also more, I felt the inherent pressure for showing up, needing to be a huge obstacle for the movie. I wanted to stop the movie right there and make the movie have to keep going in spite around me, through me, over me somehow. I wanted the movie to find its balls and do that, whether that be with Jeff and Meg or the other players or however that was going to go. And so I was trying to serve the movie as a really desperate obstacle and not make it fun at all. You know, I think some of the other characters were a lot of fun. And I just decided this is not going to be a good time. I'm not actually having fun, so you're not going to have fun. And I was like, Rob, so that's where we're at. And he's like, well, we'll see. And I'm like, okay, you just took me off the leash. Am I hearing that? And he goes, let's see. And and so away we went. I think Jake had my time in the movie infinitely smaller. So to do that from start to end as the lead of the movie, it would just be too reckless. And so he had to measure and figure out where he was just going to go psycho and be, you know, pick his spot. So I definitely think what he did was a better choice in that moment. You know, if he was just one and done in there as a psycho clown to take out some victims, then, you know, he might've just put all the chips in on this hand as well. But, you know, for Pig Killer, what's great about Jake is he can make it seem like, what? I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, like she knew, you know, I have a big dick. I mean, she knows. You know, and so it's good with him that way. He he's also, he's kind of disarmingly funny and charming. So, you know, like, wow, what are you doing with that knife? Oh, wait, hey, whoa, you know, and so he's got a little delightful meanness to him. But in general, he's like a big dog, you know, and you want to pet him. Oh, shit, these are really sharp teeth. So he's great, you know, he's great that way. And by the way, in Pig Killer, we didn't have the same type of time and or resource. So I couldn't compare those two sets. I think it was really difficult. You know, Chad also has I don't want to call it warped because that makes it sound like he's depraved or something. And that's not it. He just knows how to be disarming with his movies and make the audience like want to look away, but not be able to. And that's sort of his take. You know, Rob's always wanting you to get in there and get your hands dirty. Look, it's not so bad. Let's go. You want a piece of this too, you know? And Chad's a little bit like, oh man, I don't want to, what are they doing now? Oh, you know, so it's, they're very different and both very smart guys, you know, like, I'm never a fan of full frontal male nudity unless it is going to do something, you know, so I will question Chad on occasion.
Yeah, Jake brought this up. Jake said that sometimes you will get a little amped up on set and talk to the directors, and maybe if they're not doing something that you like.
Well, I just want them to be as accountable as I have to be for story, for you know, choice in, you know, character choice, or you know, be as engaged, you know, I'm doing this on your behalf. So be as engaged as, but you know what? Like, I think I'm a nice guy and I think I get asked to come back and work, but I can tell you there have been times where I've been intense and it's like, I come home and pop a beer and go, what the fuck? You know, was that needed? Could that not have been resolved with a, hey, time out, can I ask a question? Instead of like, get down here. Give me that walkie talkie. Can you hear me? Get the fuck down here right now. I got a question. And then throwing the walkie talkie up at the platform the director's standing on. Not because I'm an asshole or I'm difficult, just because I'm engaged. And believe me, I've seen a lot.
Plus, you want it to be right too. Like, I don't know what you did. Like, what was your upbringing? Like, I was a roofer, and that was the way that my boss taught me how to do stuff. Like yelling at, like, he constantly was yelling at me. So then when I was trying to teach people, I was constantly yelling at them, and he's like, you can't talk to them like that. And I was like, well, that's the only way I know how.
Yeah. That's what gets their attention. You know, and look, cops do it, you know, look, I'm going to shout at you to disarm you. And so I've always in scenes recognized in a confrontation, the louder you are, the more disarming you become. You know, barking dog. And so I don't know. I care and I recognize part of me is like, I've done it a lot. And I feel like I've got some experience to share. And so if you're not willing to, you know, well, you're going to paint yourself into a corner. Yeah, you just did. Okay. Now we've got 4 hours to get out of this corner, and you're cutting into my time now. And so because of your decision-making process, when we could have averted this with some, you know, but then I realized too, there's a learning curve on those things. I don't know. We're all professionals. If you're the Jamaican bobsled team, you still got to beat the Russians, right? In the Olympics, you're in the Olympics. It's all the Olympics. You're going for gold. So there's no student films. It's my first movie. Bullshit. It's your last movie, you know? So it could be great. And you want to get ahead. You want to be one of the ones that are like, hey, there's this guy doing Terrifier 3. He's pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
Or Smile 2, you know, and all of a sudden these are our guys. And but I do think there's an element of intensity that needs to be I like being focused, and there is an element of me that people get nervous because I will be quiet, but it's focus, like landing an airplane focus. And that's between action and cut, and I'm focused, I'm prepared, and I'm ready, and I'm in that moment. And I would ask not just you, but anyone that's on set to be in that moment, not on your phone checking out the score, but in that moment, how do I make Psycho Head better in this moment? And that's my expectation, whether you're the craft service or you're the director, and because that's my expectation of myself. So I do recognize sometimes, like, I'll go for 3 weeks and nobody will talk to me. And I'm like, I wonder why no one's. And they're like, we're all afraid of you. You're like a fucking maniac. And I'm like, what do you mean? You're just intense, dude. And I'm like, oh, not really. Not really.
So, we talked to Larry Hank, and he makes up his own backstory for his characters. Do you prefer to do it yourself, or would you rather whoever created the character or the director tell you the backstory?
If they've got one, I like trying to serve what their story is. If it has, I need to know that they're not just trying to impress me with, and by the way, there's all this, I think that it has to be real. And so there are guys that really, build, but I do make up my own backstory. Oftentimes I write it out, which might be a 20 page, overview about how this guy grew up. And then I will offer it to the director, in long form, if they have the time. Most of them don't have the time and or interest. They're like, oh, that's great, Lou. That's, there's porn to masturbate on, and I'm like, okay. But I like writing my own backstory for my characters. And I think that it colors the characters, obviously, because it gives the characters layers. And it starts the marination, the juices flowing of where this guy had come from. And then the blanks start getting filled in. And there's just great information that you can come up through imagination. And oftentimes, if you're working with several characters as a writer, you may not be that interested in the backstory of a player. And but if a director and or a writer, or oftentimes in the independent world, they're the same. If they've got a good, foundation of where this guy has come from. And, so Noel Klugs, for instance, for me, little guy physically, wanting to have the big guy under his thumb, immediately jealous of all the attention that Michael Myers is getting in this asylum, racist white guy having to deal with a Mexican boss. You're not the boss of me. You don't tell me what to do. It'll take two of you to handle one of me. And if I can get the big guy to do something as ugly as I do, he'll be in the same boat and I'll have control of, just always about having control. And a lot of backstory there. And that comes from my dad, not playing catch, not giving me any attention, always telling me I'd never be the man he was, physically a little wimp, a little pussy, all those things, just really ugly upbringing. And so I built all of that for Rob. He's like, okay, that's great. We don't have to share this with anybody, but you can go after Danny just a little, not too much, because I want Danny to not feel. And Danny's great. Danny Trejo is a great improv guy. And then, take your shots at Michael, however you like. And then also wanted to engage Courtney as a cousin who was not really into it, but get him, get as many, those guys that get as many people into doing bad things as them that makes them feel better. It's just one of those guys. So a lot of backstory with a guy like that. So the psycho head, then, that I was looking for the same expectation. Like, why is this guy doing this? Does he need the money? Is he an asshole? And just really, that's what made it really difficult, wasn't finding the backstory. And I'd use the dad who couldn't play catch. Because up to that point, Noel Klugs at the asylum was Smith Grove Asylum was the worst thing that I'd ever done on film. But now Psycho Head is, by a long way, by the way. And so, yeah, I like Larry Hankins' take on writing backstory. But I wouldn't dismiss, no, I've got my guy, and this is it. I'm at a point in my career where I appreciate collaboration and sort of new takes. You know, I'm always looking for a new ride, you know.
Have you ever decided, or have you ever like thought of trying to do something with one of those backstories? I know you have your Patreon where you do like short stories and stuff with people.
Yeah,
have you ever tried to like take one a little further?
Yeah. I haven't, because I always feel like I don't own those guys. Like Rob owns Psycho Head and Noel.
Sure.
And so I feel like, and you know, one of the guys that I really loved was Locus Fender from Domino. For Tony Scott, I loved my Tony Scott work, because there was a lot of backstory with those guys, and he just let me run with that, which I'm so fortunate. And so, and it always was such a satisfying experience. No, that's a good idea. I have thought about amalgamating. I we do all these self tapes for auditions, right? And so every one of these auditions is kind of its own mini movie, these characters. And you put a lot of work into these characters, like, how are they like you? How are they not like you? What's the line not to cross? Where do you cross the line? What do you want? You know, you have all these builds, and you're doing research on where they come from, and what is their physicality, and what's their speech, and, you know, their gesticulation, their, you know, mannerisms. And they have this life that you've put together, and then you put it on tape, and you send it into casting, and guys, it kind of just goes to the ether. And I have thought about, like, I've got like 400, maybe 500 of these things. I wonder if there's a way to amalgamate them all into, because they're, for me, as you know, I try to chameleon. They're all kind of a little different. They're not all Lou. They are, of course, but each one of them is kind of different. And I'd love to figure out how to make a mini, or not a mini, but a full-length feature using all these players and mix them together.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I bet AI can do that for me.
Oh, man. I was actually thinking about that earlier. What are your thoughts on all this AI stuff?
Well, I think it's like the internet. I think it's here to stay. And those of us who are not recognizing that are going to get left behind. And there's a place down the road from me here called the La Brea Tar Pits, and you can just walk right into there and we'll see you in a few thousand years. So I think you have to be aware of it and sort of on board a little bit. So I'm choosing to go that way and recognize, for me, the value of it is that it could initially provide a lot of new jobs, just fact checker jobs, just editorial jobs, jobs where prompting jobs, mentor jobs. Let's teach AI. We're here to teach AI. And I think that might open up a whole branch of new influencers, so to speak. And we're going to help inform AI. And I think that could be really interesting. And then on the other end, for someone not like me, but like all of us, the two of you, you have an opportunity, I think, to license your agent, your person, to for use and for hire. So you literally could, via AI, be two guest hosts in Japan tonight while you sleep, and be having the wheel turning and earning for passive income all over. And we'll be able to get as much Casey as we can stand, you know, like everywhere. Casey here, Casey there, here, Casey there, Casey there.
I've been saying this for weeks, that we should be AI and just not even be here completely. and just sit back and collect money.
Yeah, there's entirely an opportunity to do that. And not because you're looking for the aha, see what we did, but that you're looking for the, whoa, look what we can do, you know, and how big we can become. And I just sense that. So I have a union that's fighting AI quite a bit, and they're going to negotiate a use of my image and likeness. But I think I'll be better served by, I own my image and likeness, and if you want to use it here, here's the negotiation. So right now they're talking about, like, we want to use Lou on CSI Cleveland, and we just want him for a day, and mainly to get his likeness, and then we're going to use him all week. And he doesn't even have to be here, but we're going to put him into these variety of scenes once we build our 3D dimension of him, or 4D. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm doing five of these this week, because and here's what, and so I know what my union rate is, but my Lou Temple rate exponentially beats that. And so I'm hoping that I'm able to market my brand even more than I currently am. So, that's kind of the pie in the sky, to be honest.
So you're saying that you go in for one day, you film something, and then they have that.
They'll probably use me for seven other days,
right?
In that setting.
So, what he's talking about is, let's say that Rob Zombie decides to make a Psychohead origin story. He doesn't even have to be there, because they already have the footage of him. So AI could create any kind of scene they needed with Lou, and he doesn't even have to show up. He just gets a check.
Yeah.
No. Just a check. So, you know, and just keep building. So, and make it like, until you meet me, and I know, contrary, you know, your audience is going to think, hey, Lou's a little too much on set. I'm actually not, but, you'll be able to negotiate for my use based on a fee, you know, that I put forth, just the same, like a subscription ship. I'm going to subscribe to the Lou Temple Factory and use him because I've bought that. And
more stuff that could get done by doing that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way I can see, not even getting ahead of it, but just kind of trying to catch up to it. Cause it's already way past us. I mean,
I use it every day. I mean, I type shit into it every single day, into that ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think, we all feel very possessive of our humanality, and I agree. And I just think it, maybe like the internet, we'll be able to, how many times have I hit someone in the head with a hammer on screen and not done them service? But there's also been times in real life that I've taken that same hammer and worked on a fence, you know. I mean, so it's a tool, right? It's a tool,
right?
And all tools can be used for harm, and but they can build things too. And I think if we go into it openly, hoping that we're going, like the internet, I'm sure I read an article that was written against Edison and light bulb. This is going to be the end of humanity, because we'll never sleep. Never go to sleep because of the light bulb, right? So there's been a lot of those things. I'm not dismissing this. I think it's real. And there's someone out there that'll go, yeah, Lou, we'll see in a year if you're laughing when you haven't worked, because there's a better actor and he's AI Al. And so, you know, I it's going to be a new adventure, I think, for sure. And I feel like, I don't know who you're talking with on your interviews, but on a personal level, I feel like we're experiencing some of the planning stage right now. So we've gone through COVID, we've gone through a writer's strike, we've gone through an actor's strike, and right now we're in what's called a contraction, where Hollywood, and I just use that term loosely, but the industry is sort of pulling back, trimming its fat, and re-evaluating its reboot. And so, like, we're not going to go make that the way we used to. We're going to do it more economically and more efficiently, if possible. And I, you know, we see this, you know, Tyler Perry pulling back on $600 to $800 million build out to his studio that he's going to lease to big studios. He's like, wait, whoa, we could do it all on our phone. I could spend $1,000 and do just what I did at $800 million. Stop, you know. And so I think everybody's doing that and reassessing where the efficiency is going to be. And that is sad, because a lot of people are losing their jobs, and a lot of people aren't going to figure out how to pivot. And I'm not so sure I am either. I think this whole thing is treacherous, you know, and I don't know that we'll recover from these strikes. Well, already the strikes, you know, we all were under the mind. I don't know if you spoke to people, but things are not back. We are we're in a nightmare right now, waiting to get back. Production is not going. We're, you know, we're stringing together little bits and bobs, and it, the industry's just frankly told us, you didn't see this coming. We're redesigning. So we'll let you know when we need you. And that's going to be in about a year. And so we're, you know, we're all suffering. And so I don't know that we, someone like myself, a lunchbox guy, Morning Ralph, will recover, you know. And you know, and I guess that's nature. You know, nature has forest fires that cull out the dead wood, and new, you know, saplings sprout up, and we have that. But you know, sometimes it's nice to see some of the old pros. I still like watching Bill Moseley work, you know. I still like watching Bill Forsyth do his thing, or Ken Foray. And I could tell you from personal experience working with those guys, they have something that is really special and unique that the horror industry will not see again. You know, that there's, at it's a shadowing coming off of the Lugosi, Hammer Films, Christopher Plummer, you know, there's elements of that that casts over. And what it is, I think, I've never been able to put my finger on it, but it's the invasion of personal space. It's just in the lens, there's a discomfort as an actor that Bill and Sid, God rest his soul, and Ken and Forsyth, William, were able to get in front of me and make me feel uncomfortable, which makes the audience feel uncomfortable. And they do it very naturally. And there's just a certain lean. You can physically see it. I spent all 30 days in hell watching them do this. And so I don't necessarily have that magic, but I know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's what I'll say about AI. Wizard of Oz, to this day, still stands up as one of the greatest movies ever made. AI can't replace that kind of magic. It just can't.
No.
Terrifier didn't need AI. You can't replace the human element that creates. So they can try all they want. They'll make good products, but they will not make The Wizard of Oz or Terrifier with AI. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it will be less about what the quality of the product is and more about what the appetite of the audience is. So in other words, it gets so muted down or so reliant on a behavioral acceptance of this AI product that they'll be like, yeah, that's cool. You know, I mean, who'd have thought we'd let emojis speak for us, you know, or, you know, that some of the, that LOL would mean anything, you know, I mean, language has kind of dumbed itself down, and so maybe, and so of hamburgers, you know, I mean, I can remember the first Big Mac, you know, in the 70s, guys. And so, but that wasn't the first one, but the first one I had, and it was, I couldn't handle it as a little boy. I was on, you know, I took, when I ate my first Big Mac, I knew I was a man, you know. I ordered a Big Mac the other day and I thought I was at Crystal or something. I'm like, what? So I do worry about the product that we'll accept. And,
well, you're always going to have your fans of like Ray and I are huge fans of the practical effects, you know?
Yeah.
There's always going to be those fans. And like, I don't know. Let's talk also, about, I don't know how much time you have. So let's talk about this movie I just watched of yours, or that you were only in it for a split second, a little more than a split second, but, The Black Mass.
Talk about
a brutal fucking, some brutal scenes.
Yeah, it was so interesting because I didn't know, I knew of Divini, Miss Penn. I knew of her in the genre, but I didn't know her personally very well. But Brandon Slagle, her husband, is somebody that I've been associated with just having read a script or two and a couple projects that fell through. So he had reached out and I was kind of interested. And then somewhere socially at an event, I met Michelle Romano, the producer. And so they just asked, and I said, yeah, sure. And it wasn't even a role that I would have been interested in, but it was, I thought it was interesting, the perspective of POV of his. And then I was thinking that it wasn't going to be as brutal as it became. Their whole absolute intention was never to glorify him. And yet they did with that it was.
Yeah. And then especially at the ending too, where you're talking at the end and he just turns and smiles at the camera and walks away.
Yeah. I mean, it really is subversive. And I thought for what their resource was and what they did, I was thrilled for them. And so I liked them very much. Their set was efficient. D was very helpful. It was great, the handheld. I thought everyone was great. It's hard to get young people to understand a different generation than theirs, like the cadence of speech and how it, you know, I even noticed in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time how sometimes those guys were out of place. They just didn't feel like those kids in the 60s. And so, but nonetheless, I thought the girls were really great and terrified, and the special effects obviously was fantastic. And the period that they were able to hold up for, again, guys, this was a really small budget. And I was pleased with what I saw in the product. And then their marketing effort is great. They're really everywhere out there in the social media. And they work their butts off to get their product out there. And they do such a good job. They've gotten articles in Deadline, Hollywood Reporter. So they have a lot of cues, so to speak, as that goes. And I think their movie did great. You know, for me, Black Mass isn't a good title because we associate it with Johnny Depp's movie, right?
Yep.
And I thought that they could stand alone somewhere else. I think it is a vitally interesting place in his movement where things started to unravel and or why. We got a little bit of that, but
yeah, for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's about the 24 hours that Ted Bundy spent in Tallahassee, Florida.
Ah, right. Yep. Yeah. And which is a really, which it becomes his undoing. And so this explores why and how from his perspective and how he's, you know, unraveling. He's not the cool, calm, collected, suave charmer. You know, he's kind of a mess. And we get to see it. But yeah, I'm glad you saw that. That was great.
Yeah, I live here in Tallahassee now, so it's
Oh wow, so it's a big play. And look, they were very honorable to the victims and wanting to tell their story more than glorify Ted Bundy. And so I feel like that movie did and it didn't. So the violence to me kind of for the fan base kind of glorifies him a little bit. It's brutal, but if you're a fan,
but like you said, it shows like his unraveling, you know, like his, like what starts to bring him down, you know?
Yeah. It's harsh and that they're such sweet. They're really nice people too.
You were saying that earlier, like some of the most like brutal, some of the people who come up with the most brutal stuff are some of the most like, you know, nice. They're some of the sweetest people, but they come up with the most crazy shit.
Casey, psychopaths are out there doing fucked up shit in real life. They don't have time to make movies.
Well, that's true too. You know, you'd think, well, this would never happen, but it does every day. It's just awful what you, and now with technology, it can get even worse, you know, I just did a television show. It's a pilot series called Phrase 7. And it's about mind manipulation, a little psychotic hypnotism about how to manipulate someone's mind. Apparently, we have special ops that do this for interrogation and government black op resource. And it's scary what some guy could talk you into doing. I've never been hypnotized or under hypnosis, but I for sure won't now. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Well, that goes back to like the MK Ultra shit, right?
Yeah.
The government brainwashing the CIA brainwashing people with LSD and all that shit.
Yeah. Super, super interesting. And you know, you just don't think it can happen, but then you start wondering about the Illuminati and you know, the stuff that people of power have skeletons. Well, case in point, this P. Diddy thing that's, you know, running around out there. So stay out of trouble, guys, or pick your friends wisely.
Yeah. Let's talk about something a little less serious. Another movie with you and Jake, A Boy Called Sailboat.
Oh, that's so much fun. I adore that movie. And
yeah, great movie.
I think that the idea is just perfect, that an innocent child with a song could heal the world, or at least get them to stop to consider life. And so that was just a lot of fun to do. And I thought Jake was so fun in that movie, and I had a great time with it. And I loved working with everybody. You know, what's really interesting is they came to me and there were two roles, and there was the DJ role in which I played, but there was also this salesman, this car salesman that's in the front of the movie who has an incredible monologue. And I love the monologue. And they said, you just pick which role you want. And I said, well, here's what I want to do. I want to be the used car salesman that's also the DJ. I always go for let's have my cake and eat it too. And occasionally I've talked someone into letting me be twins or something. Not very often. And in this instance, they didn't buy that. And so I said, well, I'd like to be more in the hub of the story, getting this kid in on radio to change the world. So I'm going to take that role as opposed to, and I'll be damned if J.K. Simmons didn't call and say, hey, did Temple take which role did he take? Oh, good. Yeah. Cause I want to do that, that opening monologue. And, so clearly I don't know what I'm doing in picking roles, but he's great in it as well. So that's a beautiful film. I thought it was shot so well. We did that down in New Mexico, and, you know, that little boy is just a little boy. He was not somebody that had ever been in front of a camera, and he's just so genuine. And I think it worked.
Yeah.
Noel G's in it, you know, as the dad, hard ass dad. And I thought the whole house leaning and the rooster and just the abuela dying, you know, all of these things are just gold. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a good movie. Tell us about your Patreon, man. What's going on with that? You still running that?
It's still out there. It doesn't, for the two people that are subscribed, I don't want to dismiss them. God bless them. They're, you know, and I try to provide whatever I can to them. I've sort of taken these, what I'm doing now is, again, with all these auditions, I wanted them to live or find a place. So that's where they are. So what I do is after every audition, I'll put it on Patreon and then I will write a descriptive of it. And just like how we've had this conversation, I'll outline what I'm trying to do and how I built this character and a little bit what his backstory is and what I thought went well or didn't go well, or here's what I was trying to do and was unable to land it. And just give, you know, very specific diagram and notes of what a professional audition could be and can be. Because I don't own the material, I can't say, oh, here's my audition for Killers of the Flower Moon, or, oh, here's my Oppenheimer audition. Do you think they made a good choice in hiring, you know, Cillian Murphy? I don't go so far as to get in trouble that way, because on most of this stuff, I've signed an NDA to not share. But if you kind of, you'll recognize everything. You'll go, oh, that's, you know, Steve Zahn did that or in the movie, or, oh yeah, that's Jeremy Davies in that, or holy shit, that's how he got on The Walking Dead. And so I think that's kind of fun. That being said, very few people think that's kind of fun. I have very few subscribers. So it's out there as a an act of determination more than a viable share. You know, it's not, I am trying to share my work, honestly. And, but I don't know how. So I'm just, you know, I plug it, social media. And so if anyone's out there that's got a better idea on how to make that live, I'd be grateful.
All right.
But it's, what? You know, it's a nominal $5 subscription and you get to see every audition that I've ever done.
Nice. Yeah. The last time we talked to you, weren't you doing stuff with like scripts and stuff with like helping people write
yeah,
stuff?
I thought that would be interesting because I read so many scripts and I write a lot of scripts that I could help people kind of build their story. And that didn't take much either. You know, people are reticent to really go forth and write. And I get it. And how do I even get started? And I was going to try and inspire them to, because everybody does have a story and everyone should tell their story. Everyone's got a great story that's theirs. They don't have to go tell Breaking Bad. They've got a story. And so I wanted to sort of follow the adage in the old, one of my favorite lines in Rango is that no man can walk out on his own story. So tell yours. And that didn't land either. It might be Patreon. Maybe I'm not good at Patreon.
We're not either.
Nobody's good at it.
You know, I think originally, because I did have a meeting with the owner, he was a really nice guy, and it's originally for musicians who were trying to get around Apple and literally give their fans a new song once a month and not have to kind of share that piece of the pie. And so I think for musicians that here's what he told me. He said, you can't build a following on Patreon. You have to take your following from someplace onto Patreon. And mm-hmm. Because when I got started in social media with The Walking Dead, primarily it was Twitter was the only thing out there. Instagram hadn't really landed yet. And I guess Facebook was there. I didn't do that. But so my main audience in bulk is Twitter or X now, I suppose. And so I've just never been able to get them to cross over. And you know, if I've got 60,000 of those people, like I say, between like 10 have come over. So you can see, those are my 10 faithful. I love those guys. We got an army. Hey, I've got a football team. How's that?
What else, Ray? What did I miss here? I mean, we missed a lot. We were just shooting the shit, basically.
Yeah, I mean, but that's all right. These are my favorite kind of interviews because it's just us hanging out with somebody and having a good time. What's your favorite role you've ever done?
Oh, that's a good question. I always answer this in three parts because there's three kinds of favorites. And so I would say, because of the context, I love Ned Oldham in Unstoppable. It was a role that I knew I could do something special with because I was going to be a man on his own island. And I knew that I could fill that. And I had to convince Tony Scott to allow me the opportunity to fill it, which he did. He took a big risk and a lot of confidence in giving me the time on screen to do that. And I was really happy that, you know, for being a guy in the cab of a truck to keep the ball in the air, and really proud to be attached to that movie. And also to be part of the hero team in the end, which I don't get to be very often. Usually I'm a victim or part of the problem. One of the criminals. I love Waitress, which is a romantic comedy, a kind of a dark comedy, which is now a Broadway musical, because it was such a sweet indie that came out of nowhere and did so well at Sundance and had such a following and a love. And I had never been associated with something like that. And I love that the director, God rest her soul, Adrienne Shelley, who was murdered, pushed me in some direction that I didn't see coming. And so that was a really gratifying, validating experience. And I love Axel because for most of my time on The Walking Dead, I had a plan. And most of their time with Lou Temple, they worked to steer me off of my plan. And so, which would happen script to script. And so that was pretty fun, actually. That was like, oh, shoot, there's a curveball. How am I going to navigate? Oh, okay, I'll do that. You know, here's what I'll do. I'm a drug addict, and so I'll be white knuckling the whole time. And oh, I'm not a drug addict. My hands are cold. So that was a great experience. And also, let's be honest, to be on a show like that with that kind of visibility was really just the gift that keeps on giving, right? It's a great experience. Yeah. It makes it sound like I diminish all of Rob's roles, and not, you know, Adam Banjo was so special to me. For all the right reasons, because I wasn't aware of what a great opportunity it was going to be. I wasn't aware of the friendship that I'd have with Rob Zombie or the work association with a real creator like that. I had not been introduced to that genre, the horror genre, so I had no idea what that experience could be like and what it has become. And, you know, Adam could fit in and be like number two very easily. Noel and Psycho Head, you know, they're definitely, you know, I don't go around and go, hey, mom, did you see Psycho Head? Because you'd be proud of your old boy to see that, you know. So, but Adam Banjo, I do. And that was such a great time. But that was lightning in a bottle. That was a time and a place, probably not unlike Terrifier 2 or Smile, that just was perfect. It was perfect. It was the Super Bowl of horror films. And really, I think it was because of the four guys that I mentioned, Sid, Bill, Ken and William, no doubt.
So since you brought up your mom, what movie would you remake as the main character that she would be proud of?
That's a great question. Oh, she loved Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So I'm definitely thinking I would, even though that movie is perfect for me, I like to try to get in there and be remake Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and shoot. I like Butch, obviously. He's great. But, you know, the guy that's really good that probably serves me better, if I'm being honest, is the when they get to Bolivia and, you know, he was also in Cool Hand Luke, Martin Struthers. What we have here is a failure to communicate. I don't like it. You don't like it, Luke. You know, he maybe that's the small part that Lou Temple ends up in. But those are great parts. I love Warren Oates and all of Peckinpah's stuff. But that's me. My mom loves Steve McQueen and Bullitt. You know, I guess through some of these Driver, I guess we've done a few Bullitt type movie. We haven't remade Bullitt yet, have we?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Get on it, Lou. Get on it.
I'm gonna get that Mustang. I'm gonna get that.
Well, everybody's remaking everything now.
I'm just glad he didn't say that he was gonna be in a remake of Magic Mike for his mom. That's all I care about.
Yeah, mom, she's probably not interested in Mike. Although, you know, didn't McConaughey do a few of those?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Hey, I'm not gonna lie, I like that movie. I think it's fine.
I've not seen those. Not because just I've always had something to do, like anything.
Other than that?
Yeah, like anything, yeah.
I know, Ray has a lot. You know, I'd watch Ray it, gets
Dan,
all this
if Dan Roebuck and Clint Howard were in it, I would watch it.
Oh, that would be a great version.
Yeah.
We Magic.
Yeah. Magic Mac. Magic, Magic Matt.
Magic you know. Clint.
Yeah.
Imagine how that looks in print, though. If Clint has the wrong font.
Yeah. Yeah. Not.
Oh,
not
you got good. You were talking about the cameos in Terrifier 3. I heard one earlier this week or maybe last week. It was Shelley from one of the Friday the 13th was on set.
Whoa. Really?
Oh, interesting. Is that Lisa Wilcox?
No, it was
the dude who actually owned the hockey mask originally is Shelly, the character.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Shelly, the character. Oh,
yeah, the character. Yeah.
Yeah, the fat dude who can't get laid and he got the hockey mask. And then
Larry Zerner is his real name.
Yeah, that maybe doesn't surprise me. Hey, you know, there's a guy, Jay Bonasagna is a writer. And he writes the compendium for The Walking Dead, particularly The Rise of the Governor. And he's written several other books, one of which is a great novel called Self-Storage, about a functioning heroin addict who's a single dad looking out after his son during the Christmas holiday and gets locked in his storage unit, which becomes Dante's Inferno. And it's, he enables his six-year-old son, you know, he's in withdrawal and they find a little gack and they both have a Merry Christmas. And so it's great. It's crazy. And I love it. I love that. Jay wrote the book, but he's also done the script. And I'm going to do that with this guy, Chris Jericho, who was also in
He was in Terrifier 2 at the end, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a big wrestling.
Only like one of the biggest wrestlers of all time.
Yeah. So
people might know him as Fozzy, the rock star. Also, yeah.
Yeah.
So so at first we were going to use CM Punk, but then we ended up with Chris Jericho. Did we trade up?
I think so, personally. Okay. And Jericho's a huge horror dude too. He's been on the Joe Bob Briggs, The Last Drive-In a few times.
Yeah, gotcha. Jericho's good. CM Punk's not bad either. He was in that movie. He plays the guy in the house.
Yeah, but personally, I think he's just not.
He's not as big a name. Not even close to as big a name. But he's not a bad actor either.
Okay, good. Yeah, that'll be fun. Those guys are.
Yeah, hell yeah. And when was that? Did that start yet? Or
no, we'll probably do that this fall.
Okay.
Got to wait for Chicago. Chicago's got to get a little cold. Got to get some. Got to get some Chicago ice. You know. Some black ice.
Nice. Awesome, man. This has been fun, man. Where can people find you? Is there anything you want to plug?
You know, I'm out there on Instagram as Lou Temple Actor. Very original. Like when you make these things, you don't. Back when I did it, I was kind of making fun of them, of myself, and now I'm living with it. Same thing on Twitter or X, and I think it's just Lou Temple on Facebook. Hey, and don't forget that Patreon account, which is the Texican, which is that's my brand, the Texican. I feel like I got it. Maybe I should just put out mustache wax or something.
Maybe. Hey, I work with. Well, we're partnered up with this couple of different beard companies. We can talk to them about it.
You get some the Texican beer. Yeah, that'd be awesome. What beer do you guys? Do you guys pimp a beer every week? Do you pimp a
no
beer?
Not beer beard beard
oh beard oh beard balm right yeah yeah, yeah
yeah yeah no for fuck's sake, I've been trying to get a beer sponsorship on this show since I started it, and I just no one will give me my beer sponsorship. It's disturbing. I drink so much beer, I could help these people.
We're trying.
The beard is I think beard balm is great because of its hygiene, manicure, manscaping, all those things. And so I got, sadly, you don't ever think about stuff, but during the course of my run on The Walking Dead, because of Axel's mustache, a company came to me. It might have been Captain, what is it? Captain, who is that that has the mustache? But wanted to know if I wanted to do a Axel's Waxel. And and I always thought I should have done that, but damn.
I'll talk to my guys. We'll get you hooked up.
Get a little mustache wax. Yeah, you know, that stuff, it's all about the product, really. Your facial hair is only as good as, for me, your facial hair is only as good as your product. So, you know, if you're holding, you're bold and yeah.
All right, brother. We'll let you go, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lou, for your time, man. Appreciate it.
It's been a lot of fun. Always. Yeah. Hit me up anytime. You guys do a great job with your show. I'm sure you're just continuing to build, right?
Yeah. We've built quite a little brand here since the last time that we talked to you.
That's great. So. That's awesome. I'll keep on building, man. And, you know, keep doing a good job. You guys have a good, you know, a good tact with your guests, and it's a really comfortable setting. I think your audience must appreciate it. And you guys, you're well versed on great leading questions. You know, I never feel bored when I'm having a visit with you two, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, man. We appreciate that.
And remember, here's my 100% of the things you do get done. That's my parting gift to your audience.
All right, man.
For Thank Monday morning. All right. Adios, guys. Take care.
See you, man. Thank Bye. You.
Have a great night.
Good night.